Welcome to Entrepreneurhood, where we break entrepreneurship down into three simple pillars: business, lifestyle, and motivation. Our goal is to use our personal experiences as industry leaders to guide and inspire young entrepreneurs to see the lesson in every challenge. Because we understand that companies don't succeed, people do. Now, welcome the leaders of Entrepreneurhood, Lakim and KB.
Hello, world. Welcome to Entrepreneurhood, episode 2. My name is Caleb Lewis, aka KB the Trainer. I hope you guys checked out episode 1. But episode 2, we definitely have to introduce the amazing co-host, my brother, Lakim James. His story is crazy, very uplifting, very motivating, no matter where you're from. Lakim is a CEO since he was 22 years old. He's a speaker, a motivator, the president of James Marketing Consultants, a six-figure earner, sales professional, and has aspirations of being a multi-millionaire before he turns 30. Wow.
Yeah.
That's big things. That's big things. So, Lay, where are you from, man?
Yeah, what's good? What's good? What's good, everyone? So, like Caleb said, my name is Lakim James. Fun fact, I always share this with everyone. My first name, Lakim, is Michael spelled backwards. So, I always share that with everyone just to make sure people know, because I know a lot of people, they struggle with spelling Lakim or even how to pronounce it.
Yeah, but, and that's the only way I remember, so that works.
You know, it never fails. So I was born in Kingston, Jamaica, raised in New York City. And KB and I, we met back in summer of 2000 when we were 8. And I think when I first met KB, I didn't wear any shoes.
You didn't. It's not a thought.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, I've come a long way, man, you know, not wearing any shoes. You know, one interesting thing that I think a lot of people didn't even know with me being born in Jamaica, I was actually a Jamaican citizen until 2016. So it's pretty unique that I was able to run a company while being a Jamaican citizen.
Nah, that's definitely big, man. That's, you know, the whole, you know, immigrant story and background, it motivates a lot of people, especially you come, you know, to the U.S. and You take advantage of the resources that the average American person wouldn't take advantage of. So you are a sales marketing CEO. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, man. So I have a sales and marketing firm out in Indianapolis, and I represent like a lot of Fortune 100 and 500 companies. So you think of like any of the top companies, you know, Verizon, T-Mobile, Amazon, and right now we represent AT&T.
That's pretty dope, man. It's like, so how did you start doing that job? Like, how did that even come about?
Yeah. So it all started back when I was in college, man. So being in college, I wanted to like get an internship. And my first internship I got when I was in college was personal training. So it's funny, you know, at one point, bro, we were literally like doing the same exact thing. And I did three certifications of high intensity training. I was did that for a gym. And it's funny, at one point, I thought both you and I were going to like both have our own gyms and, you know, kind of be able to partner that way. But like, no shade, bro. Like, after doing personal training for a while, I hated it. I hated it so much.
No, I definitely understand. But what was one of your reasons, though?
The one thing I hated about personal training was the schedule. Waking up at 4 or 5 o'clock, meeting to meet a client, and then for a client not to show, that irritated me so much. and then I had to see the same people all the time. The kind of training I was doing, nobody was getting results.
You should have been an Uber trainer.
I should have, bro.
Wow. So, and then, you went to school, right? So you graduated with what degree?
So yeah, I got my bachelor's in business. So I got my 4-year degree. I did it in 3.5 years.
3.5 years, wow. And what was your motivation to finish so fast?
So the whole thing of why I decided to do that was my whole entire reason of going to college was to play college basketball. And I was able to accomplish that. I played college basketball for 2 years. I went to Rosemont College out in Philadelphia, and I did it, you know, and it was an amazing journey, and I'm grateful for the experiences that I had. But beginning of my junior year, like, I had like an epiphany, man. And me and the coach, we wasn't seeing eye to eye. He was treating me like a bench player, and he just wanted me to like just to be a practice player. And I was like, nah, man, well, I'm from in New York. We ain't no practice players. It's either you going to start me or I ain't going to be on the team no more.
You always need Jared Dudley on the team, bro.
Nah, bro. If I ain't starting, I wasn't with it. So he, you know, him and I, we didn't see eye to eye. And as a result, I was like, you know what? My junior year, I decided to quit the team. And that kind of, it hurt my heart, man, because growing up, basketball is all I did. And when I quit the team, I think like I called my parents and I like almost cried, or I did cry. I can't even remember. It was a dark time.
You probably cried.
Yeah.
It's cool, though.
Yeah, I probably shed a couple of tears. And then I was like, yo, man, whatever I decide to do after this, I'm going to go 100%. And being a student athlete, anyone who's a student athlete understands that, like, when you're a student athlete, you literally can't do anything else. And once that journey ended, a new door opened, and I decided, like, I just wanted to take my education serious. And Rosemont College costs about $40,000 a year to go to. So I said my whole purpose was to play college ball, and now that I'm not, I might as well graduate early. So I made a decision the beginning of my junior year that I wanted to graduate one semester early. So I just started taking a lot of classes, and I got it done.
No, that's big. That's a lot of people that's, you know, they're in school for about 6 years, and you did it in 3.5. So I commend you that, because I only did a semester. So let's go back. So what was like your first sign of entrepreneur? Like entrepreneur, be entrepreneur mindset.
To be honest, bro, I didn't even know what an entrepreneur was until my sophomore year in college. So my whole life, no one ever explained to me what an entrepreneur was. And once I learned what it was, I thought that, you know, in order to be an entrepreneur, you have to come from money or you have to have a huge network. And I had neither.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's not something that's taught. So, like, what was your first sign of doing business and transactions? Like, what did you do? Did you know you wanted to pursue that?
Like, it depends on how far you want to go. So, I think...
We need everything.
All right. So, I'll take it all the way back. All right. So, I think it all started from, like, when I was a kid, you know? So, I was always trying to make a dollar, man. Always. And you know this firsthand, KB. Like, if it goes all the way back to when we were kids in Southside. So, on the block, one was trash day. Trash day was, like... What day was trash day? Like what, Tuesday or something?
Yeah, I think Tuesday and Friday.
Yeah, something like that, right? So no one never told me this, but what I realized was every Tuesday and Friday, people would throw away a lot of stuff. And what's the saying? One man trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah,
you know? And people would throw away a lot of valuable stuff. And me at 8 years old, I was like, yo, people are throwing this away. So something came to me that like I should go collect all of the bikes that people are throwing away, and I would fix the bikes. I would buy little parts, put them together, and then I'll sell them to kids in the neighborhood for like $60.
You flipping bikes and you fixing, that's a trade right there.
Yeah, so, all right, so that's the first one, right? The second one was in high school. I used to be called the Candy Man.
Yeah, I think everybody had the experience, but how did you do it?
Have you ever found $40 in your favorite jeans? It probably got you hyped, right? Yeah, I know the feeling. That's exactly what happens when I check my DigiCount every month. In 2019, I was able to pay down $10,000 in debt without even thinking about it, thanks to DigiApp. It's an online automated savings account where it helps you pay for your next vacation, credit card, or even just for a rainy day. And on top of that, they give you 1% of bonuses every 3 months just for saving your own money. If you need help with saving or budgeting, please click the link in our show notes for details. You get paid $5 today just for signing up with Entrepreneurhood.
So, yeah. So, in high school, I used to be the candy man. My mom used to give me lunch money. Shout out to my mom. I love you. And she would give me $10, probably like, you know, 3 times a week. And I was like, yo, $30, that ain't cutting it, man. Like, I need more. So,
wait, how much is lunch?
I don't know what I was spending the money on. But she was giving me $30 a week. And I was like, man, $30 ain't enough. Because the real reason I wanted the money was not to buy lunch, was to buy Jordans.
So, oh, that was the real reason.
Yeah, I would starve myself for some J's. But I needed to eat and I needed some J's. So here's what I did. So
typical kid in the hood. Keep going.
So what I did was I would go to the corner store, buy $10 worth of candy. At the time, everything was 50 cents, right? I would then take that, go to school, and everything that I bought for 50 cents, I would obviously sell for a dollar. And I would turn the 10 into 20, and then I would rinse and repeat. By the end of the week, you know, I was able to make almost like $200. So that was my second sign of entrepreneurhood. And I didn't even know it.
Yeah, man, you can't be talking about cleaning money on here. This is not... This is not the right podcast for that. But yeah, I get the idea.
Yeah, and then check this out. So what ended the Candyman's career was I got caught by school safety or public safety.
And listening.
And what happened was public safety came up to me because I always kept my candy in like a black bag. Like, you know, the bag that the corner store gives you. And I would just keep, I would have everything. I had Snickers, Skittles, like Kit Kats, you name it, I had it. And then it came up to me, it was like, hey, we got a report saying that you're selling candy, is it true? And I was like, yeah, why? And this is the first time I was taught the word soliciting, because the school safety said what I was doing was illegal and I was soliciting in high school. And this was when I was 14, and I was like, what's soliciting? I'm just trying to make money, like, and I'm giving the people what they want. And then he was like, man, if I catch you doing this again, we're going to have to kick you out. And I was like, all right, the candy man, we done.
Yeah, man, it had to be somebody hating on you, man. It's snitching.
Yeah, it was a quick career, and it ended quick with the candy man.
So can you talk about your first legal sales experience?
So I'm telling you, I didn't know it was illegal at the time, but all right, the first legal one was eBay. And I think you touched upon it in episode one. Again, shout out to my little sister Colette. She found out about eBay, and what eBay really was just flipping thing. When we got into eBay and I told you about it, you was well known for selling the sneakers and the belts, like stuff like that. And for me, my niche was the electronics. So, like, I was selling PSPs, Xbox, the PlayStations. Broken iPods. I didn't even know those things would sell. And what we did was I would talk to, you know, people in school. And I was like, hey, man, you got anything that you don't need? I'll buy it off of you for, like, $20. And sometimes it was like, nah, man, 20 is too cheap. And what I did was I did delayed gratification. And
he's a shark.
And what that means was I knew I wanted to, you know, spend 20, and I always lowballed people. So I would see that they had something. And in high school, everybody needs money. So because I was the candy man for a little bit, I had a little bit of money saved up. Anytime I saw something that I wanted, I would say, yo, I'll buy that for you for $20. And that's period one. And then it was like, nah, I'm not interested. I'm like, okay, cool. So then period four came around. We were in gym, you know, doing our thing. I'm like, yo, like the PlayStation, like $20. I was like, nah, man, like I don't want it. So I'm like, okay. Then period eight came around. Same thing. Like, yo, you sure you $20, man? Like, it's just a good deal. And then again, I got denied. And then it wasn't until after school. That's where all the money was made.
Stomach is growling. Everybody else is eating.
And then that's where I come in. It would always happen when we were like at the pizza shop or Burger King or whatever. And, you know, I know someone wanted something to eat and they didn't have no money. And then I came in again with my $20 deal. And at the time, man, they couldn't deny it. And they were like, you know what, man, I need the $20. Just give me the $20 and you could take my PlayStation or my Xbox or whatever. And... again, that's another form of entrepreneurhood in itself, man.
So what it looks like is that you're not afraid of rejection at all.
I did not know that at the time, but that's a fact. Rejection didn't faze me.
Because, you know, you fast forward to, you know, being 22 and you're doing sales door to door. That has to be something that has to be accustomed to, rejection.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how did you feel when you got like your first door slammed in your face?
To be honest, that side of sales never fazed me. And here's why. Growing up in Southside Jamaica, Queens, man, the amount of things that we were exposed to, like, KB, you could justify this, man. We seen, like, so many violence, like, drug deals, shootouts, like, a lot of things that should have made us be different people than who we are today. But I think all of those experiences toughened me up, and it also always made me aware of my surroundings. So when I got into sales and I learned that people would say no and I still had more opportunities, for me, it never fazed me. So I was easily able to brush it off.
That's tough. And being that, you know, how was your payout being a sales rep?
So I don't know if you remember this story, but when I first got into sales, I hit you up and I was like, yo, bro, I got this great job, man. And like, I'm so excited. I can make a lot of money, but if I don't make sales, I don't get paid. And you was like, wait, what? And that's a great job. And I was like, yo, yeah, because it's the opportunity. You know, I've always been the person that went after opportunity. And when I first started, I was just such a great student. Like, if I want to learn something, I will do whatever needs to be done to master the task. And luckily, you know, I was able to master the pitch and everything that they taught me. So I was able to pick up sales pretty quickly. And then I started to realize that I was kind of good.
Yeah, because it's tough. I remember you telling me, say, you know, I eat what I kill. And at that time, I'm like, so you could work 30, 40 hours a week and not come home with zero.
60 hours a week and come home with nothing.
60. And yeah, that's crazy. And when you tell me about the upside of an opportunity, if you get, you know, you get your full commission if you do get one. So you're like, well, if I just get one, yes, you know, that's going to give you the confidence to go to the next thing. And I think that's a big part of people need to understand is, like, you're going to fail many times, but if you have a few successes, that's really all you need.
That's it.
So I definitely commend you for sticking out with that, because now, you know, you got the corner office. You CEO now.
Tell you, man, it's all worth it. Always works out in the end.
So being that, you know, it's the company's named after you, what do you think is one of the biggest challenges that you have to uphold as being a leader?
So one, the reason why I decided to name the company after myself is very similar to what you said in episode one, man. Like, I feel like where we're from, we chase legacy. And legacy to me means everything. When my name is on it, I have to make sure it's a representation of what I want it to be. So I named it James Marketing Consultants. And the reason why I named it that was because, A, most people can't pronounce my first name, Lay Kim. So everybody butchers my first name, but James is a common name and it's my family name. So it meant everything to me. And, you know, I developed four core values that I stick by. And my core values are, number one, integrity, number two, innovation, number three, competition, and then number four, entrepreneurship. So those are the values that I created because it's a representation of what I stand behind.
No, I definitely agree. That's pretty big to have it like that. And it's dope that you could put it, you know, your own company, your own mission statement is based on how you feel. And that's how other people, you know, standard now. So it's pretty cool that you can do that for your own company. So let's take it back. So you said, you know, we from Southside. So those don't know, we used to live on Rockaway 135.
Yeah.
So went from Southside. We went to high school together at Flushing. Then you went to Rosemont in PA.
Yeah.
Now, where are you at now? The people need to know.
So I went from Southside, Jamaica, Queens, went to college in Philly, so in Pennsylvania. And now I currently live in Indianapolis.
Now, that is a big jump that we have to talk about, the transitioning from Philly to Indianapolis. I don't even know how to spell Indianapolis. I don't even know. I see Indianapolis on the map. I just don't think I know about is the Colts, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what can you tell us about that whole move, being a black kid from, you know, the hood?
Man, I think the biggest thing of that whole transition was being an entrepreneur. Sometimes you got to realize there's certain things you got to give up or you got to sacrifice to get big results. So I chose Indianapolis. Like you said, man, when I first moved here, for the first like 6 months, I couldn't spell it. When they told me that I had an opportunity to go to Indy, the only reason why I chose it was, one, the cost of living out here is way cheaper than the East Coast, man. Like, rent compared to New York and Philly, it's a joke. Number two was, they said that there's like a lot of young professionals that are like, Indy is like, Indianapolis is an up and coming city. So that was very appealing to me. And then three, I knew that with me coming with that East Coast drive, like, I knew I was going to be able to make a mark in the Midwest.
So do you feel like people had a stigma just because you're saying you're from New York and you are dark skinned? Like, how did that come about? Like, how did, and you being the CEO in a company named after you, how did that work?
Oh yeah, man. I stick out like a sore thumb out here, man. So it's crazy because when I first came from Philly, every time someone came in for an interview and they saw that I was the CEO, I felt like they always double-taked, or they said congratulations. So like, if I was a white man, they wouldn't say that, you know? So
they thought you was the help, huh?
Yeah, like, they don't know, like, I'm not the help, I'm the one who call the shots.
Yeah, that's a big step being, you know, 22. Like, even though I started my own, you know, business, but I was dealing with people that I was already familiar with. But being that you went out there, I definitely commend you on that, because it's a whole new world, whole different type of lifestyle, especially compared to New York. I'm pretty sure you was homesick or like all the time.
Oh, bro, absolutely. So again, me coming to Indy, man, I have no family out here. No family. You know, Indy is not predominantly African American. I'm sure you guys probably know. So I had to like get used to not seeing a lot of people that look like me. And my family is a 10-hour drive, or like, you know, a 4-hour flight. And when I first moved here, man, I was broke. So I had to like just put my head down and keep going until I saw a little bit of success.
Yeah, thank God you didn't sell candy illegally out there.
Oh, nah, man. Like, I would have that would have ended real quick, quicker than in high school.
So what would you say, as of right now, what is your favorite failure?
Wow. My favorite failure. That's an interesting way to phrase it. If I was to choose one, I would say saving $100,000 by time I turned 24 and losing it all within like 12 to 15 months.
Damn, that's almost suicidal thoughts right there.
Oh yeah, man. Like, when that whole thing went down, man, like, I lost all my confidence.
All right, so wait. You didn't only just make 100K. You saved 100K. Like, 100, six figures is sitting in your account. Like, you could see six digits.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you wake up one morning a couple months later and it's zero there.
Gone. Like, like a ghost, bro. It was like it was never even there.
All right. Well, from where we're from, the first thing people ask is, like, do you have an addiction? Do you have a problem?
Absolutely not, man. So I'm not an alcoholic. I don't do drugs, you know, none of that stuff. I think it's just a combination of getting very comfortable, making a lot of bad decisions, because when I was at that stage, people viewed me as a bank and I allowed it, and just thinking the money was never going to stop.
Yeah, that sounds like, you know, similar to like a lot of our favorite athletes or your musicians, where you get caught up and you're making it, and then you realize, you know, you're outweighing with the income.
Yeah, yep.
And it's always important, that's why they say, you know, pay yourself first, always put money to the side, you know, for a rainy day, and it's for situations like that. But that's pretty tough, like, to get up and to be, you know, CEO and leader of people, and knowing that you've been through that, how did you respond to that? Like, how did you get your drive to motivate your guys? Because sales, you need motivation constantly. It's a daily thing. So being that, you know, you have that, your own personal situation, how did you not let that affect you when it came to your leadership?
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie, it did. It did for like 6 months, man. You know, I was sad. I avoided all my conference calls, and I really had to fake it until I made it, because they said tasting a little bit of success and then going back to being a nobody. Because if you never had it, then you didn't know what you're missing out on. But when you actually taste it and then you got to go back to being broke, that's tough.
Yeah, a lot of rappers say that. It's better to not have it, better to getting it and losing it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like I said, it was a dark time because my confidence was low, and I had to, like, on the surface, anytime I ran my meetings, I had to let my people know that, hey, like, and just so off the record, none of my employees, like, know or knew about it at the time. So this is, like, first time I'm kind of really getting it out there.
So we got an Entrepreneurhood exclusive?
Exclusive, man. This is exclusive.
You hit that James Marketing Consultant team. You got to go through the struggle, you know, ups and downs. And your CEO here speaking about one of his favorite failures. So what is some of your favorite successes that you had?
So it's been a few, man. So going through the ups and the downs is being able to help people that mean the most to you. So in 2017, my mom went through like a tough time. And again, all my family's out in New York City. And my mom hit me up, and my mom, you know, is a nurse. And she got hurt on the job. And if anybody doesn't know, the cost of living in New York is, like, very expensive. So my mom got behind on some of her bills, and she called me, like, almost crying. And I never hear my mom cry. And she was like, son, I can't work. And my mom doesn't have, you know, at the time didn't have great credit. So she was like, I need $6,000, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And she was like, I need to come up with $3,000 now, and I need another $3,000 in a month, and I don't know what I should do. And I heard the sadness in my mom's voice, and in 2017, I was 23, and I had to, like, make a decision. So I said, Mom, you know what, let me make a phone call, and I'll call you back and see what I could do. So as soon as I got off the phone with my mom, I called my accountant. My accountant, her name is Kelly. Shout out to you, Kelly. She helped me through a lot of good and bad decisions. I made a lot of bad decisions, but she helped me through a lot of the good ones. And I was like, yo, Kelly, my mom just called me, and my mom was almost on the phone crying because she needs $6,000. And I don't know what I should do. And at the time I had about $50,000 saved, but, you know, remind you, 4 years prior, I just graduated college. I was broke. Like, you know, I've never had that much kind of money. And my accountant was like, Lee Kim, are you crazy? That's your mom. Anything your mom need, you give it to her. If your mom need $10,000, you give it to her, because, like, think about, you know, who helped you out the most. And I was like, yeah, you're right, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly.
And again, I don't know why I needed her approval, but I just wanted to, you know, make sure I was making a good decision. So after I got off the phone, I called my mom back, and I was like, hey, Mom, so I got some good news. I didn't tell you this, but I've been doing pretty good in business. So I know you need $3,000 now, and you need another $3,000 later. But what I could do is I could give you the full $6,000 today. And my mom was like, son, are you serious? Like, you could really do this? And I was like, yeah, Mom, like, I've been doing pretty good in business. So I was able to give my mom $6,000 on the spot. And later that year, you know, she went through another tough spot. And I was able to give her some more money. So collectively for 2017, I was able to give my mom $14,000. And I mean, to be honest, KB, that was like the best feeling ever, man, because my mom has done so much for me, and she means everything to me.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the biggest part, you know, of being an entrepreneur is not only, you know, have your own schedule, you know, being a boss, but being in a position, not saying you can't do other jobs, but, you know, the outcome and the how much you make is dependent on you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that you put in effort every day, you working every day, you know, responding back to people, you making these calls. So when things happen, you can be that person in that position for the ones you love. And that's so motivating, because, you know, every person, you know, once they, you know, get on, they want to, you know, do something for their mother. And being that you're in the process of you moving different and still saving, you're like, all right, Mom, I got you this time. And I'm pretty sure she appreciated that greatly, you know, for, you know, her son to be able to look out for her, not knowing what she could do in her situation. So
that's big on that. That's definitely big, you know, for any entrepreneur to actually do that.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, I think the best feeling ever was the text message that my mom sent me after I gave her the money. She was like, son, you know, on behalf of me and your sister, I want to say thank you because of you being able to help us. That's the reason why we're able to keep our house in New York City. And I still got that text till this day, man. This is 2020. And she sent me that text in 2017. And that text message meant the world to me because being able to do that for my mom, that was like what I dreamed of.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing story, man. Like even hearing it again, it gives me chills. And, you know, I heard it, you know, multiple times before.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like, you know, your mom is definitely a big part. But we also have to talk about, you know, your fiance, because yes, through those ups and downs, she's been there. And how much of a help was she, you know, as far as you going through, you know, your ups and downs of being sales and losing 100K and then on the way to make it back? Like how has she been there for you?
Yeah, man. So, you know, shout out to my fiance, Tiana Johnson, soon to be Tiana James. You know, she really been with me from, you know, from day one. So she been with me since I was an assistant manager out in Philadelphia. And, you know, one thing that I could say confidently is that she loves me for me, not for the money, not for the success, not for anything else. Because, man, there's been times that I've been super low and she's been there, and there's been times that I've been super high, and, you know, the love didn't change. And, you know, when I first got into entrepreneurship, I really struggled with balancing giving her attention with working, because when you start a business, your business is your baby. And I just wanted to make sure that I kept my business afloat. So she understood me working 17 hour days, and she didn't switch up on me, and I trust her, and it's a good feeling, man.
Yeah, that's so real, because I think a lot of people don't really notice that the great men, you know, the ones that are doing exceedingly well, like in our culture, have a foundation. And when I mean foundation, they have a significant other, they have a partner, they have a wife that holds them down, you know, mentally. It might not be financially, but a lot of times we go through so many situations throughout the day. It's important that we come home to somebody who can help take our mind off of that. Having a partner is so valuable, because who you with can be your rise or your fall in your journey. And that's for men or women.
That's true, because we say it all the time. Entrepreneurship is lonely, man. It's such a lonely journey. And that's why I want to get this message out, because I don't want it to be a lonely journey. Like, I want people to know that there's support, and, you know, we want to create this community that people could know that other people go through the same thing that they're thinking or that they're going through.
Yeah. It's such a topic that needs to be talked about that's not talked about. And I think that, you know, us having this platform, we're going to be able to express that. As far as being, you know, a black man at that and want to seek, you know, marriage and partnership. And I think that's very important, because a lot, we both don't come from perfect homes. The fact that we want to do that, and we want to do it, you know, the right way, and also build a family and a foundation, also build our business at the same time, you know, we got to get a clap it up for ourselves, man.
Yeah.
this is not, you know, a thing. So we're making it a thing, and we really motivating the culture, but just by doing what we're doing, but we're doing it in our own way.
Yeah.
So I would like to say, man, what advice can you give to the young entrepreneur that's going door to door doing sales, and they just feel like, you know, it's so inconsistent and it's ups and downs, and, you know, they just don't know where they're at in life, but they want more. So what do you say to that person that's coming up?
So my best advice for anybody that's trying to stay in the game, get in the game, is understand this, man. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And what that means is, when you start something, if it's easy, it won't last. And you got to understand that you got to go through the growing pains. So I just want people to know that nothing stays hard forever. And I'm so grateful that I decided to stick with my guns and not give up on myself, because there are going to be dark times and low places where your confidence is low. A lot of people are discouraging you, but that's when you got to push through, because if I gave up, I would have never been able to save $100,000 at the age of 24. So I want everybody to know you got to push through if you want to have big results. In order to win big, you got to play big.
Wow. Hashtag entrepreneurhood. So you would say basically everything you just said will sum up entrepreneurhood for you?
Yeah, man. So again, you know, for me, entrepreneurhood is an idea of the ups and the downs, the good and the bad, and being able to make it into a lesson and a win at the end, because the only way you lose is if you give up or you quit. And I made my decision that once I stopped playing basketball, or I quit the basketball team in college, the next thing I decided to do, I'm going to ride this till the wheels fall off. And I'm grateful that I ran into sales and I got into entrepreneurship. So I'm in this forever.
That's big. Entrepreneurhood for life. You're about to get the tat and everything.
Yeah, once we get big, I'm going to get the tat. Not right now, though.
I got one last question for you, Lay. What do you want to happen within the next, 5 to 10 years? Like, what is something that you envision of your life, or what do you want to achieve? What do you want to happen?
So I think for me, I've always had this saying since I was like 17, 18, that my goal is to be a multimillionaire by the time I turn 30. And right now I'm 26. So I got 4 years to keep grinding and put in the work. And a lot of people, they think when I say that is because they're like, only thing I care about is money. But hear me out. The reason why I want to be a multimillionaire by the time I turn 30 is because I know I have to become a different person in order to accomplish that. So the person I am today isn't multimillionaire ready, but I have to keep growing and I have to keep getting better. So my goal is to accomplish that, have a multi-million-dollar net worth. And the reason why I want to do that is because of the people that I want to take care of and the people that's relying on me. So I think a lot of people, they think having a lot of money is a bad thing. I think it's selfish not to want to have a lot of money, because even though you might not need it, there's someone in your life that's counting on you to take care of them. So that's what I want to do in the next few years.
Man, that's a dope perspective, because, yeah, a lot of people, they're scared of money. They think if you get money, you turn evil automatically. And, that's not always the case. Some people, everybody's different. And it's all about, you staying true to yourself. So I agree with that. And I'm with you with, being a millionaire while we're 30, because entrepreneurhood is going to go across the world.
Yeah.
You're going to get 1 million subscribers on opening day, and it's going to be lit.
Tell you, man, in order to win big, you got to play big. So that's what this platform is meant for.
Yeah, man, I'm glad we had this talk that we could share with the world. All right, there you have it. Episode 2 in the bag. My name is KB. Here you have Lay. And we here to take, this podcast thing over. All entrepreneurship category, be number one in the world. Peace.
Anyone can start, but only champions finish. Now that you've completed this episode, you're ready to continue your journey by connecting directly with our hosts of Entrepreneurhood. Follow us on Instagram at The Entrepreneur Hood to stay updated with the community. For each episode, the first set of listeners to tag us on Instagram and leave a 5-star review will be entered into a drawing to get a free 1-on-1 coaching session on the topic of entrepreneurship with our hosts. Remember, there is no shame in struggling, because we fail, we grow, and we win. Right here on Entrepreneur Hood.